Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. It is time for the Daily Dive for March 4th, 2024. Tomorrow, we'll get into some deep dives. Been working on them all day. I think you're going to love them for this month, plus continue some others and a couple of others. It's going to be a busy, busy month, but let's do the Daily Dive. And somebody we have not talked about on the Daily Dive for a while, Meghan Markle. She is going to spend International Women's Day at South by Southwest. She's been named as one of the keynote panelists. And the South by Southwest press release says, celebrates the convergence of technology, film, television, and music. And on International Women's Day, Meghan, along with Brooke Shields, Katie Couric, Erin Haynes, Nancy Wang Yun, will be making up the panel for a talk titled Breaking Barriers, Shaping Narratives, How Women Lead On and Off the Screen. Well, I mean, what is Meghan on this one? Third, probably, after Brooke Shields and Katie Couric? I think so. And what, like, if you look at Katie Couric, long career, right? Worked her butt off, did a lot of things, anchored the evening news, the network evening news, did morning talks. Brooke Shields started off as a child being basically abused by her mom, sexualized. Turned out to have a pretty decent career. Everybody knows who she is. She worked hard. Meghan, what'd you do? I was in Suits for a little bit and then got married to a prince. Oh, okay. That's breaking barriers, shaping narratives. We are so honored to host this distinguished group on International Women's Day for a significant discussion on the importance of representation in media and entertainment. The panel have been selected because they all champion human rights and gender equality. The Duchess is in great company with Emmy Award-winning journalist Katie. Meghan hasn't won one of those. Brooke, two-time Golden Award, Golden Globe Award nominee, an author, sociologist, pop culture expert. You know, I mean, just come on. It just like, a few years ago, there's no way that Meghan would have done a panel of five where she's going to get 20% of the speaking time. I would venture to say that Katie and Brooke, and also probably Erin, because she does host the Amendment podcast. I mean, Nancy, I don't know how, I've never heard Nancy speak, so I don't know like how, you know, assertive she'll be in that situation, but Meghan's going to be like fourth in the speaking kind of thing. A few years ago, she would have wanted to be the only one. And why is Meghan keep traveling everywhere and also without Harry all the time? That's a question. Another question is, was it Kate Middleton? It's a really bad photo, so it's really hard to play that game. But she was seen riding an SUV driven by her mom. She basically had to come out, right? All this pressure. Because everybody's just like, where is she? 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 So 9 a.m., just outside London. Mom's driving. I saw a lot of people speculate that it was probably Pippa. I don't think it's Pippa. I just think that she had surgery and she doesn't look 100% exactly like we expect her. Plus, it's a grainy, long-distance photo through a windshield. And then blown up. I think it's probably her. But just, you know. And the palace is, you know, just so tired of answering the question. There was one thing that said, we gave guidance 2 days ago that the Princess of Wales continues to be doing well. As we've been clear since our initial statement in January, we shall not be providing a running commentary, providing daily updates. I don't think we're going to get any updates, at least not for the next couple days. But we might, because Gary Goldsmith is on Celebrity Big Brother in UK. He went into the house tonight. And he's talking about, like a teaser, talking about Kate. She said, she's simply perfect. The first time I met William, Catherine was cooking and William said, hi, do you want a cup of tea? Very normal. And he's talked about, you know, the depictions of the royal family. When in January he spoke out about the Crown's portrayal of his sister and her family. Said, some of the show is ridiculous and, you know, fantastical. I really, really enjoyed the first couple of episodes in the first series of The Crown, but it seems to just drift into this fantasy world. There's so many parts of it that I don't agree with, and I think the narrative and for trying to get headlines and view and audience. So once it started becoming ridiculous and fantastical, it was very difficult to watch. So I stopped. I mean, this is the guy. This is the guy you want on Celebrity Big Brother. Because if he knows anything, he'll spill it. You know, he's even said, I often read that people think I'm a bit of a bad boy. It'd be lovely to put the record straight, but winding people up is probably my favorite hobby. Every part of me is just riddled with mischief and danger. I'm an absolute nightmare to live with. There's a reason why I've had four wives. And the wife that he's still married to is the one he assaulted back in 2017. Because the two had got drunk, and then he punched his wife. She fell down, hit her head on the ground. Got fined. 12-month community kind of service. 20 sessions of rehab. But he said, you know, about Kate, she's beautiful on the outside, but more beautiful on the inside, and really is a doting mom. So the way the monarchy is moving, it's family-centric. That's why I got so upset with Harry and Meghan, because you don't put a stick into that spoke and reinvent history. I got pretty miffed when they had a pop at my beautiful niece who couldn't say anything for herself. I think everyone felt the same about how much did we love Harry, and throwing your family under the bus just seemed inappropriate, especially what was happening with the Queen. I just thought it was totally unnecessary. And said he was horrified and incensed at the racism claims against Kate. Said it's absolute BS, and I didn't hide my feelings very well when I was offered the opportunity to say something. I just thought I'd say it as I saw it. I did think I caught the tone of the nation. Kate is 100% not racist, neither is Carol. My family's not racist, and for Kate to be portrayed as that is just so far removed from the truth, it's ridiculous. And talking about Kate and her surgery, he says, I've spoken to Carol just to send my love, and we talked about Kate given what's going on. There's lots going on in the family at the moment, so she's spinning a lot of plates right now. It's quite stressful. So the last thing I'm going to do is bring any stress to them. But I'm going to go on Celebrity Big Brother. Kate was a bridesmaid at his first wedding, a guest at his second. In 2009, he was doing coke. He got caught doing coke with a sex worker in Ibiza. Probably not going to get caught doing coke with a sex worker in Ibiza is Taylor Swift. But we had the most ridiculous thing today on the Today Show, actually, where basically they just said what we already knew, and it was just, although it was under the guise of genealogy company Ancestry, Taylor Swift already knew that she was related to Emily Dickinson. This is all just kind of, you know, promo for her new album. I mean, 100%. But they, I mean, her album's called The Tortured Poets Department. So, of course, that's what's going to be there. Now, how is she related to Emily? They're sixth cousins three times removed. They both descend from a 17th century English immigrant. Swift's ninth great-grandfather and Dickinson's sixth great-grandfather, who was an early settler of Windsor, Connecticut. Taylor's ancestors remain in Connecticut for six generations until her part of the family eventually settled in northwestern Pennsylvania, where they married into the Swift family line. Taylor always references Emily Dickinson. Always. I mean, ever more inspired by her. She announced the album's release on December 10th, 2020, Emily Dickinson's birthday. Dickinson wrote a poem called One Sister Have I in Our House, which features the word forevermore. And a few days before she announced the release of Evermore, Taylor also discussed the cover of her album Folklore, telling Entertainment Weekly she had an idea for this girl sleepwalking through the forest in a nightgown in 1830. That's the year Emily Dickinson was born. This is all just one big setup. It's like watching a Taylor Swift Travis Kelce date. Now, I'm not going to talk about Jason Kelce retiring, but it was quite emotional. And Travis was there with his Taylor Swift bracelets, so good for him. Not good for anybody, because this is going to be a mess. And it's also not good that I'm talking about this person 2 days in a row, and I promise not to make it a habit. And that's Janelle Evans. But she has legally filed to end her marriage with David Eason. After 6 years of marriage, honest to goodness, if you had just said, asked me, like straight up, in a Q&A, Zoom party, how long have David and Janelle been married? I probably would have told you a solid decade. 6 years seems short. But she filed a court complaint for separation. In the filing, she lashed out at Easton and pointed out erratic behavior, including his admission of killing their pet dog. didn't she like come up with some kind of cover story for that before? And now all of a sudden she's like, oh yeah, he really did kill the dog. And the separation filing discusses his alleged refusal to work and excessive spending of her income. I could have told you that a long time ago. But, you know, this kind of opens the way for her to do some reality television again now that there's no David Eason. But she says in the filing their text exchanges with him that she calls criminal conversations. And I don't know, there's one line in it that just, it's so Janelle. The couple officially separate on February 16th with the internet that the separation be permanent. I think we meant intent. Not that I don't make a ton of spelling errors, so I'm not one to say anything. Throughout the duration of the marriage of the parties, the defendant has exhibited concerning and at times disturbing behavior towards the plaintiff. In May of 2019, defendant shot and killed the family's pet French bulldog, Nugget. I love how they put the name in there. Instead of just family's pet French bulldog, they said Nugget. In front of the minor child, referring to their 7-year-old daughter. As a result, Janelle claims David's killing of the family pet resulted in the Columbus County Department of Child Services instituting proceedings against the parties and took into custody the minor children. And then she talks about what happened to Jace. On or about September 28, 2023, a report was made to medical professionals by the plaintiff's oldest minor child that following the sheriff's office investigation, David was subsequently charged with misdemeanor child abuse and felony assault by strangulation. Despite the voluntary dismissal of the underlying DSS proceedings, the defendant's criminal case is still pending, and the defendant is subject to several no-contact provisions in the aforementioned criminal case. Since the DSS case was voluntarily dismissed and primary physical custody of Jace reverted back to the plaintiff, the defendant left the former marital residence at the behest of the plaintiff so that he could return home with the plaintiff and his siblings. And then Janelle claims that David, you know, who she says is living on her boat, has failed to check in on her and inquire about their daughter, Ensley. That's kind of I get it, but don't you want him as far away as possible? Why do you want him checking in? David has been spending his days drinking liquor at a bar near the marina. We haven't seen any pictures of that, have we? I'm kind of surprised. She said that David had refused to give her the key to her mailbox, which has prevented her from picking up her son Jace's prescription, so putting the minor child at risk for detrimental health effects. And then remember, I mentioned yesterday about Marissa, and she said that he abandoned Marissa after he left their marital home. David developed no plan for ensuring both of his biological minor children were cared for, offered Janelle zero support and assistance with any of the minor children during this time, and that she needed the 16-year-old out of the house so she could focus all her attention on Jace, especially since he had just been forced into DSS custody because of alleged acts of domestic violence by the defendant. I think we kind of need a palate cleanser after that one. So let's do something I did a couple weeks ago, last week. Remember, I talked about Bette Davis and talked about different authors and how they, you know, talked about different rumors of Bette Davis's life. Well, let's do the same thing with Judy Garland. And some things that, you know, often are speculated about Judy Garland. And there's three books: Rainbow, The Stormy Life of Judy Garland, and then Judy Garland, and then Get Happy. So what about Judy's mother? Well, Judy obviously had a lot of bad treatment through her career. The parents' marriage had broken down, then her father died. Her mom was a stage mother from hell who worked Judy extremely hard for years before she even became a film performer. Then after Judy was signed in MGM, she kept up the pressure. Ethel was on the payroll of MGM and was complicit in the dieting regimes forced on Judy by Louis B. Mayer. And that is in the Judy Garland book. And Ethel could be really cold and unaffectionate. Ethel remarried, but Judy hated her new stepdad and was upset that the marriage took place on the fourth anniversary of her father's death. Shortly after the marriage, which ultimately lasted almost 4 years, the stepfather announced he was taking charge of all the family finances, including Judy's income, and Ethel quickly rejected that idea. What do the authors say about her early film career? She was a great talent, signed by MGM at 13, but her physical appearance was a dilemma. She was only almost 5 feet. and considered cute rather than glamorous. And, you know, they wanted the leading female performers to be glamorous. She's 13 years old. But she was too old for child roles. And she was really anxious about her appearance. Charles Walters, who directed her in a couple of films, said Judy went to school at Metro with Ava Gardner, Lana Turner, Elizabeth Taylor. Real beauties. But Judy was the big moneymaker at the time, a big success, but she was the ugly duckling. I think it had a very damaging effect on her emotionally for a long time. I think it lasted forever, really. And Louis B. Mayer called her a little hunchback. Let's talk about the pills. So, Finch, who wrote the book The Stormy Life of Judy Garland, said there were studio doctors who would prescribe stimulants to get workers through the day, tranquilizers to sleep at night. And Judy called the pills bolts and jolts. And Finch says drug use was widespread on the film studio lots. At the studios, auxiliary workers like makeup artists apparently did a lucrative side trade selling pills. Many drugs not available now were available then without a prescription. And prescriptions for the others were often easy to obtain. And Finch says that Judy Garland had a terrible problem with insomnia. And she would sit up and read or play records past midnight, then down some pills for 2 to 3 hours sleep before a 5 a.m. call. And even before The Wizard of Oz, she was already being overworked. She had made Thoroughbreds Don't Cry with Mickey Rooney and then had to shoot 2 more films without any kind of really break. And she survived on a diet of chicken soup and diet pills. So she was always fainting. And then Edwards, in their book, said that a new system was inaugurated between setups and other performer scenes. When you had like this time lag of 1 to 3 hours, Judy would be escorted to the studio hospital, given a strong enough dosage of Nembutal to put her immediately to sleep. And then 15 minutes before she was to appear before the cameras, she was awakened, fed a handful of uppers, and sent back to the stage. Now, what about The Wizard of Oz? Edward says that in the lead up to The Wizard of Oz, Judy was ordered to slim down, so fasted on alternate days. And Judy continued to take both stimulants and tranquilizers throughout production of The Wizard of Oz. And then after The Wizard of Oz wrapped, Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney had to go to the press for that movie that they did. It was 5 weeks. And Judy had to do an extra week on her own when Rooney was recalled to start filming his next movie. And then Judy was back in Hollywood making Babes in Arms so it could be released right after The Wizard of Oz. Now, pay rates in the lead up to The Wizard of Oz. Ethel had negotiated a pay increase for Judy, putting her up to $500 a week. Mickey Rooney was making $5,000 a week. Now, he was a box office name, but I mean, $500. Even the Judy's Wizard of Oz co-stars were paid more. Ray Bolger, the Scarecrow, got $3,000 a week. The Tin Man got $3,000 a week. The Lion got $2,500 a week. And why wasn't she getting paid that much? And she's in more scenes than them. They had to do more makeup. And after the Wizard of Oz, Judy'd like to tell funny stories about it, but considered it an important film and regarded it with almost religious reverence. She was aware it had really solidified her as a bona fide movie star. She also loved Over the Rainbow. And Wizard of Oz was her hardest film, especially because of the dieting. And Margaret Hamilton, who played the Wicked Witch of the West, who once got caught on fire when they were filming, and so then she had a stunt double. But she says that The Tin Man and the Lion and the Scarecrow and even the Wizard feared Judy would upstage them, so they played against her rather than with her. And Judy was also aware she was second choice in the role. Louis B. Mayer had wanted Shirley Temple. And Margaret Hamilton, like I said, that green makeup applied and removed every day. And when that special effects explosion happened, she couldn't work for a month and a half. Just like horrible. And Judy, I guess, had ruined a lot of takes of a previous film with her giggling, and it became notorious on set. And Victor Fleming, who directed the color section of The Wizard of Oz, slapped Judy one day when she couldn't stop giggling in a scene with the Lion. And then she came back and did it in one take. And apparently he felt really bad that he had slapped her. The studio during the production told Judy she was fat, that she wasn't a good performer, and that it was the studio that made her look good, that she could be replaced. And after Judy died, her ex, Sid Luft, wrote that she told him she had been groped by some of the actors playing Munchkins. And Garland, you know, had claimed the Munchkins were a bunch of drunks who partied all night, and that the police picked them up in butterfly nets. Judy did like to embellish stories. She once claimed MGM ruined her singing in The Wizard of Oz by dressing her in tight corsets, but that's not true because all the songs were pre-recorded. So, but one time Judy told a tale of getting stuck in a parachute ride with Mickey Rooney, but apparently that never happened at all. Now, I wish something that would never happen at all is Kim Kardashian more and more in our life. But she's going to be there. This whole acting and producing thing is going well for her. And over the weekend, there was a major bidding battle that saw Amazon Studios come out the winner. And it's an untitled thriller written by Natalie Krinsky. And Kim Kardashian is attached to star and produce. Five studios supposedly bidding for this. Don't know if it's just going to be streaming. Don't know if it's just going to be the movies. Nobody even knows much about the picture. That is just, it's a thriller and developed specifically for Kim. She had already sold The Fifth Wheel over to Netflix, which is a comedy. And of course, she's an American Horror Story. I mean, she's been killing it. And, you know, Krinsky, I mean, to her credit, was just pitching the hell out of this thing. And really did a good job. She's the one who sold it. And she, you know, used to write for Gossip Girl, Grey's Anatomy. She even directed the Broken Hearts Gallery for Sony Pictures. She also wrote it. So I guess we're going to have Kim Kardashian even more in our life now. Now, last week, but the whole February short month thing, it always confuses me. But the trial of Hannah Gutierrez Reed started. And it's been so boring that I haven't mentioned in any of the daily dives because really there has been nothing newsworthy at all. The trial is supposed to end this week, but today we finally had some sparks. A lot of it. And Seth Kenny, who was the ammunition supplier, who everybody assumes is the one who brought the live ammunition onto the set, which he vehemently denies, he was on the stand. And he said that he started to sense there were efforts to redistribute blame or the cause of this accident towards him. Because he said that right after the accident, the attorneys for Hannah, as well as for her dad, Thel Reed, who's 81, veteran movie consultant and sharpshooter, they kept asserting that the live ammunition on the set came through Kenny. And so he's like really worried about that. And, you know, Gutierrez can go to jail for 3 years if she's found guilty. But just before the lunch break, it was read out in court that Kenny declared, shit. Well, she still didn't do her effing job. And that was on a phone call with the Santa Fe Sheriff's Department detective. And, you know, then Gutierrez Reed's defense attorney started taking shots at Kenny. And, you know, everybody, I think, assumes rightfully so at this point that Gutierrez Reed was not probably the right hire for that position. And so the only kind of thing that she can really play at this point is, hey, he's the one who provided the information. And also, he didn't help me at all. He was never there like he was supposed to be. And originally, the Santa Fe Sheriff's Department did view Kenny as the, you know, primary source probably for the live ammunition. But they botched the investigation and they found live rounds in his Albuquerque gun shop, but it didn't resemble the ones found on the Rust set. And, you know, part of the problem was is that they waited forever to go look at his shop and everything like that. But he provided dummy rounds, blanks, and other weapons for Rust. And he also bought the brand new Colt 45 that Alec Baldwin used on the movie. And he said it came from a provider in California. And it was designated specifically for use on Rust. And he told the court that he provided a single box of 50 Colt 45 dummy rounds that had just come off the prop truck in Texas from Taylor Sheridan's 1883 series, which Kenny also worked on. And he said he handed it over to the Rust prop master, Sarah Zachary, on October 12th, 2021. Now remember, the shooting happened on October 21st. And then they were shown, everybody in the court was shown old texts between himself and Gutierrez Reed. And he said that his last conversation with Hannah was a self-described expletive-filled text from October 16th. And that exchange was related to an accidental discharge of a blank on the set of Rust. And he said that Gutierrez Reed was emotional. And he added he felt he was due an apology from her and her dad. But Gutierrez Reed in the text said, "You just send me out to do these things and don't teach me. Shame on both of you." And that's what she wrote to Kenny. And Kenny admitted that he had issues with Hannah, but he had no power to fire her from Rust. He said, "It's not that I wanted her fired. She was doing a horrible job at props. I had mixed feelings about it. If I really wanted her fired, I could have gotten her fired, but he didn't because of his close relationship with her dad." Now, what was really interesting and the defense found incredulous was that Kenny couldn't give definite dates of when he drove back and forth from the 1883 set in Texas to New Mexico. That's when you're moving ammunition from one location to another. And the defense attorney believes that Kenny was at least in part responsible for that live ammo getting on the Rust set. And in 2 years, he still hadn't been able to figure out when he drove back and forth from the 1883 set to New Mexico. It was just back and forth, but at least it was interesting. And the first person on the stand was basically boring, and it's been what we had all the previous days of the trial, Karen Kuhn. She was the still photographer. And she just said, "Hey, when there's not a big budget, you get people who aren't as qualified." And that's why we ended up with Hannah Gutierrez Reed. Then there was a crime scene technician who basically said that they waited several weeks after the shooting to go to Kenny's Albuquerque shop. And so he could have thrown it away, it could have been lost, it could have misfiled. And one of the crazy things also that we heard today was Rebecca Smith, who did craft service. She was asked to hold a baggie of powder for Gutierrez Reed. And Rebecca Smith said, "Hey, I'm a recovering addict, and I believe that the powder was cocaine." And then she said that she tossed it into a garbage can in the hotel hallway after she left Gutierrez Reed's room. But after the shooting, Smith said she got a bunch of texts from Hannah wanting her stuff back. But Smith testified that she told no one about the incident or the powder because she wanted to stay out of the Rust investigation. But in September 2023, she received a text from the special prosecutor seeking information, and that became part of the evidence tampering charge that Hannah was hit with when she didn't take the plea deal. And, you know, Alec Baldwin's lawyers are just watching this. Now they're going to know exactly what's going to be asked and everything. His trial starts on July 9th, and I think that he can be sentenced to 18 months in jail, but he won't be. And by the way, if you're curious about anybody, if they've bought Rust yet, they have not. Now, again, maybe a little palate cleanser. We had Joshua Jackson and Lupita Nyong'o out in Puerto Vallarta. They finally showed off. They brought a photographer with them who sold everything to Backgrid. Got lots of pictures of Lupita and Joshua holding hands, kissing, all this kind of stuff. And just, they look happy, but the pictures are just so staged. It just, at this point in time, that's why I like the Kate Middleton one, even though we can't tell maybe 100% who it is. It's a nice paparazzi photo, right? It could have been a setup, but it was a setup that at least made it look believable. I mean, somebody was obviously tipped that Kate was in the car. Now, somebody should have given Usher a tip, and that tip is do not fly all the way to Bali, Indonesia, to hang out with serial rapist Russell Simmons, and then let Russell talk about it and post photos of you there and with young girls. And it was really upsetting and unnerving and creepy to see the poses of these little girls with like Usher and these other grown men and stuff. I mean, Usher's almost 50 years old. I guess his wife said, "Hey, let's combine a honeymoon to Bali and a visit at Russell Simmons, who's hiding out in Bali because he can't come home." Also, well, she can go home. But anyway, one of the great things in life is when Shannon Doherty gets on a roll and starts talking smack about her former co-stars. And she did that again on her Let's Be Clear podcast today. She was with Brian Austin Green, a.k.a. Bag. And they were talking about this argument, this fight that Shannon Doherty got into with Jenny Garth. And she said, Jenny was doing, she was calling it pants down day, where she would pull the pants on some of the crew members in a funny way, and some of them were getting pretty annoyed with it. And then I reversed it, and I said skirt up day. And she always wore the men's Calvin Klein boxer shorts under her clothes, so I didn't think it was that big of a deal. And so I did skirt up day, and oh my God, she lost it on me, and I was just not in the mood to back down. And Brian Austin Green said, I totally remember the fight. You know, Ian Ziering and I like rushed in, and he goes, I remember one point when there was a fight out front and Ian and I were there. And so we were the two that stepped into kind of the middle of it to keep it from escalating. And Brian Austin Green brought up the fact that it felt like to him that all the female cast members were always having to compete and that it wasn't an easy situation to watch. Also not easy to watch is Jennifer Lopez out with Ben Affleck. So, to put things in perspective, we had Ben Affleck hopelessly excited and happy to be at Disneyland with Jennifer Garner. Then we had the leak kind of thing of Jennifer Lopez yesterday with the whole, oh, you know, he was writing me love letters all the way 2010. Then today we have stage paparazzi photos where Ben looks miserable and he's forced to hold Jennifer Lopez's hand, which he never does, while they're out shopping. It's just like, you're going to hold my hand. We're going to take pictures. They're going to be right there and try and look like you're having a good time. It always looks like he's cramping up when they do these kind of photos. But there's another photo today that I found interesting. But we had Countess Luann de Lesseps, and Mary-Kate Olsen's ex-husband, Olivier Sarkozy. And everybody's speculating that the two are dating. I mean, Countess Luann and Mary-Kate's ex? Luann does not look 12. So I really find that hard to believe. Oh. I was going to talk about PK not wearing his wedding ring. And Dorito. Obviously, I had a little blind today about Dorito maybe liking a real estate agent who's not Mauricio. So we shall have to see. But let's see the blind items revealed from today. Actually, for the weekend. Saturday, the first one, number one, is from February 23rd. The star of a yet-to-be-released DC movie had his whole pay package moved to front end because no one thinks the studio will be there at the end to pay him or the payments will be tied up in bankruptcy court. And that's Joaquin Phoenix and the Joker movie. Number two is from February 23rd. This three-named living legend loves talking about the old days. She also likes trashing this now dead permanent A-list comic legend whenever she can. She says that when the comic was in his 40s and she was barely old enough to drive, that he tried to sleep with her and didn't take no for an answer very well. And that's Mamie Van Doren and Bob Hope. Number three, speaking of which, with maybe Mamie Van Doren, I would love to have her on the podcast. Number three is from February 23rd. Speaking of out of the country, this former A-plus list rapper used to attend whatever fashion shows in Italy he wanted to attend. None of the big houses wanted him in attendance this year. He had to settle for ones that no A-listers would normally attend. That's Kanye West. Number four is from February 24th, and you guys have heard this twice now for me. Because the tiny country was able to throw so much money at the A-plus list singer, no other country in the region could host concerts by the singer, so she didn't care about the people of the region. It was all about how much money she could demand from the tiny rich country. That's Singapore and Taylor Swift. On Sunday, number one was from February 24th. As much money as the movie side of the studio is losing, the gaming side is losing even more. The gaming side is on pace to lose hundreds of millions of dollars year over year. And that's Warner Brothers. Because last year they had a Harry Potter video game. This year, they do not. Number two is from February 24th. With her budget being minuscule, the illiterate one is trying to convince people to work for her for free on her new podcast. And that's Meghan Markle. Number three is from February 25th. This lottery-sounding rapper has just been told that her marketing budget has been cut in half. Her singles aren't selling or being streamed enough to justify the amount of money they've already spent on her. Her new single peaked at number 100 on the Hot 100, and the execs are infuriated, and that's Latto. Number four is from February 25th. The A-list singer slash bad actor is overselling his love of his wife. It gives off Jada Pinkett Smith vibes. That's Justin Timberlake and Jessica Biel. And today's number one is from February 24th. The reason the ex-wife is in the new movie instead of the current wife is that this A-plus slash A-list actor hates the new wife and wouldn't have taken the part. And that's Jennifer Garner, Jennifer Lopez, and Matt Damon. Number two is from February 24th. Are we sure that the magazine the Barely There Celebrity Offspring landed the cover of is not one big yachting ad? It looks that way. I'm not sure what the cover photo is really trying to convey other than the offspring's flexible and not wearing many clothes. And that's Amelia Gray Hamlin and Perfect Magazine. Number three was from February 25th. This A-plus slash A-list actor director would have you believe he met the man he recently portrayed. He didn't. That's Bradley Cooper and Leonard Bernstein. Number four is from February 26th. This A slash A-minus list actress, writer, producer is pregnant again, but once again is being sneaky about it, kind of like the whole who is the daddy thing, and that's Mindy Kaling. And number five is from February 26th. Perhaps someone should tell the A-plus list YouTuber how product distribution works in grocery stores. Oh, and he should make a product that actually tastes good too. And that's Mr. Beast. And that's it for this one. I will talk to you guys later.